Dr. Brown gave this talk on a TED convention or a TED presentation, and without going into too much background as who Dr. Brown is or the TED organization, they bring forward speakers with very innovative thoughts and what to contribute. And I heard this Motzei Shabbos, and it's been the issue itself has been really weighing on me for quite some time, especially in my work with my own clients as a life coach, to hear their struggles, their inability to connect with their spouses. That's always number one, is their discussion about their inability to connect with their spouses, and then with their children, with their parents, with siblings, and with others around them. And of course, we all pay lip service to Dveikus Hashem, this attachment to the Creator. And we see it as a lofty, almost unattainable level of connection. So, what's missing? Why don't I feel worthy? Where am I lacking? And this sense of unworthiness, it's just not a passing emotion. It's a deep-rooted, deep-seated feeling that drives me in to pain, and a level of pain that, since I'm an addict and I'm powerless, I'm going to go to my Trugashkoit. So here's what Dr. Brown has to say about connections and the power of vulnerability. Making connections. Think about that, Hevra. Because it's what gives purpose and meaning to our lives. This is what it's all about. It doesn't matter whether you talk to people who work in social justice or yeshivas or mental health and deal with abuse and neglect. What we know is that connection, the ability to feel connected, is even neurobiologically, that's how we're wired. It's why we're here. When you ask people about love, they tell you about heartbreak. When you ask people about belonging, they tell you their most excruciating experiences of being excluded. And when you ask people about connection, the stories they tell you are about disconnection. Shame. Shame is really understood now as the fear of disconnection. Think about that. What is shame? Why are we ashamed? Is there something about me that if other people know it or see it, that I won't be worthy of connection? And here's what I can tell you about it. It's universal. We all have it. The only people who don't experience shame have no capacity for human empathy or connection. No one wants to talk about it, and the less you talk about it, the more you have it. What underpins this shame is, I'm not good enough. And we all know that feeling. I'm not blank enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not beautiful enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not promoted enough. The thing that underpins this was an excruciating vulnerability, this idea of, in order to connect, for a connection to happen, we have to allow ourselves to be seen, really seen. Healthy, well-connected people have a sense of worthiness. That's what this comes down to, Hevra, a sense of worthiness. They have a strong sense of love and belonging. There was only one variable that separated the people who have a strong sense of love and belonging and the people who really struggle for it. And that was The people who have a strong sense of love and belonging believe that they're worthy of love and belonging. That's it. They just simply believe they're worthy, that they're worth it. And to me, the hard part of the one thing that keeps us out of connection is our fear that we're not worthy of connection. So what do those people who have a strong sense of love and belonging have in common? And the first words that come to mind is the term wholehearted. These are wholehearted people living from this deep sense of worthiness. I repeat, wholehearted, beshlemus, wholehearted people living from a deep sense of worthiness. And here's what I found. What they had in common was also a sense of courage. Courage. And so these folks had, very simply, the courage to be imperfect. They had the compassion to be kind to themselves first and then to others, because as it turns out, we cannot practice compassion with other people if we can't treat ourselves kindly. And the last was that they had connection, and that was the harder part of it. Why? It was a result of their authenticity. They were willing to let go of who they thought they should be in order to be who they were. And I'll repeat that. They were willing to let go of who they thought they should be in order to be who they really were, which you absolutely have to do in order to make the connection. The other thing wholehearted people had in common was that they fully embraced vulnerability. They believed that what made them vulnerable also made them beautiful. They didn't talk about vulnerability being easy or comfortable, but nor did they say that it was really excruciating. They just talked about it as being necessary. They talked about the willingness to say, I love you first, the willingness to do something where there are no guarantees, the willingness to breathe through waiting for the doctor to call you after your colonoscopy. They're willing to invest in a relationship that may or may not work out. These wholehearted people thought this was fundamental. And now my mission to control and predict had turned up the answer that the way to live is with vulnerability and to stop controlling and predicting. I'll repeat that, because I'm a control freak, and I live by a mission to control and predict, but the answer that comes out of this at the end of time is that the way to live with vulnerability is to stop controlling and predicting. And now that I know that vulnerability is the core of shame and fear and our struggle for worthiness, I've learned that it's also the birthplace of joy, of creativity, of belonging, and of love. So what are we doing with vulnerability? Most of us, we numb our vulnerability when we're waiting for the call, having to ask someone for help because I'm sick, when we're newly married, asking for a raise at work, being turned down, asking someone out, waiting for the doctor to call back, getting laid off, laying off people. This is the world we live in. We live in a vulnerable world. And one of the ways we deal with it is that we numb our vulnerability. And I think there's a lot of evidence that we're doing it. And it's not the only reason the evidence exists, but it's a huge cause. Check it out. Did you know we are the most in debt, obese, addicted, and medicated adult population in U.S. history? The problem is, and I learned this from research, is that you cannot selectively numb emotion. You can't say, okay, here's the bad stuff. Here's vulnerability. Here's grief. Here's shame. Here's fear. Here's disappointment. I don't want to feel these anymore. So I'm going to surf the internet and then stroll through the shopping mall. Wow. You can't numb those hard feelings without also numbing the other effects, the other emotion. You cannot selectively numb. When we numb those, we numb joy. We numb gratitude. We numb happiness. And then we're miserable. And we're looking for purpose and meaning, and then we feel vulnerable. So then we hop back onto the computer or visit the mall, and it becomes this dangerous cycle. One of the things I think we need to think about is why and how we numb. And it doesn't just have to be our addiction. The other thing we do, and listen carefully, is we make everything that's uncertain, certain. Do you hear that mechanism? We make everything that's uncertain, certain. It's how I feel in control in a world that's out of control. Religion has gone from a belief in faith and mystery to certainty. I'm wrong, I'm right, you're wrong, so shut up, that's it. Just be certain. The more afraid we are, the more vulnerable we are, the more afraid we are. The cycle. This is what politics looks like today. There's no discourse anymore. There's no conversation. There's just blame. You know how blame is described? Another way to describe blame is a way to discharge pain and discomfort. I'll repeat that. Blame can be described as a way to discharge pain and discomfort. And so what do? We proceed to perfect the world around us, or at least that's what we think we're doing, when we use our willpower and our self-reliance to organize, manipulate, dominate, and control. And we perfect most dangerously our children. Let me tell you what I think about children. Children are born hardwired, just like you, for struggle when they get here. That's what God does for all babies. And when you hold those perfect little babies in your hand, your job is not to say, look at her, she's perfect. It's my job is to keep her perfect, make sure that she's on the tennis team by fifth grade and in Yale by seventh grade. That's not our job. Our job is to look at this little baby and say, you know what? You're imperfect, and you're wired for struggle, but you are worthy of love and belonging. That's our job. Show me a generation of kids raised like that, and we'll end the problems I think we see today. We pretend that what we do doesn't have an effect on people. We do that in our personal lives. We do that in the corporate world, whether it's a bailout, an oil spill, a recall. We pretend like what we're doing doesn't have a huge impact on other people. We just need to say we're sorry and we'll fix it. But there's another way, and I'll leave you with this. This is what I found out. To let ourselves be seen, deeply seen, vulnerably seen, to love with our whole hearts, even though there's no guarantee. And that's really hard. And I can tell you as a parent, that's excruciatingly difficult. And as a husband, and a father, and a boss, and a chavrusa, to practice gratitude and joy in those moments of terror, when we're wondering, can I love you this much? Can I believe in this passionately? Can I be this fierce about this? Just to be able to stop and instead of catastrophizing what might happen, to say, I'm just so grateful because to feel vulnerable means that I'm alive. And the last, which I think is probably the most important, is to believe that we're enough. Because when we work from a place I believe, that says, I'm enough, then we stop screaming and we start listening and we're kinder and gentler to the people around us, so we're kinder and gentler to ourselves.